أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
There's a place where words make people, a place where you're invited to expand your heart and mind. There's a place where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. You're listening to the American Muslim 360 Radio Network, 24/7, Muslim-hosted, from religion and current world events, politics, faith and education, marriage and health, music and arts, physical fitness and more. Join AM 360, where we're helping to build a model community every day. It's a place where you can help remake the world.
A'udhu Billahi Minash Shaitan Rajim. Bismillah Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillah, we are happy to welcome you to the power
Greetings.
Of educating our
own. Greetings, this is Priscilla Lukta of the University of Islam and Clara Muhammad School National Alumni Association. We support CWSC and AM 360 because of their support of our group intellect. From the Model Communities National Resource Directory and Speakers Bureau to American Muslim 360 Broadcasting and more. Join in helping to build our national intelligentsia. If not me and you, then who? Visit CWSC.us today to make your tax-deductible gift at 910-317-0297. Thank you.
A'udhu Billahi Minash Shaitan Ar-Rajim. Bismillah Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim. Dear AM 360 listeners, thank you for your patience as we work through our technical difficulties. And welcome.
Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen. Houston, Texas, better known as the Bayou City, is proud to be hosting the 15th annual A Time to Be Grateful Awards Banquet this December 14th through the 16th. The weekend will kick off Friday with Culture Night themed A Journey Through Time, hosted by Preacher Moss and featuring performances by the MGT Step Team, the soulful vocal sounds of Akila Nihanda, the energetic wisdom of Islamic Force, and the dynamic sounds of the Ron Cole Band. Don't miss the early morning exercises led by Fitness Life's own Hanifa Salim. Saturday includes a tour of the Bayou City, knowledge sharing, workshops, as well as political and community engagement, mental health education, and business seminars. Also, there will be a youth track for ages 13 through 17, hosted by America's premier youth camp, Camp Khalil. For the single brothers and sisters looking to connect with your other half, the Black Muslim Singles Society is hosting a single social to help you reach that goal. Don't worry, married couples, there will be a marriage social for you as well. Imam Fahim Shuaib is bringing his expertise to help you keep the honey sweet on the moon. Saturday evening, dress to impress for the awards banquet. The keynote speaker for the evening is author, spoken word artist, and city councilman, the prominent Bashir Jones. Bashir Jones is the first Muslim to be elected to the Cleveland, Ohio City Council. Sunday is all about the business. At the business breakfast, leaders will share insights on starting and growing your business. And the weekend will end with the interfaith public address. Don't miss out. Get your tickets today. You can register online at www.muslimjournal.net/ATTBG. Vending and advertisement space is also available. So don't delay. Register today. Go to www.muslimjournal.net/ATTBG. We will see you there, inshallah.
American Muslim 360 presents
The Power of Educating Our Own.
Thank you. I need to establish a thinking inside of ourselves and inside of our youth and our families and our communities. And that is powerful, the power of educating our own.
And now your host, Quran Shakir.
Assalamu alaikum. AM 360 listeners, thank you for your patience as we work through our technical difficulty. Today we want to talk about a challenge that we have as a Muslim community. Every year, on the evening of October 31st, millions of children across North America paint their faces, dress up in costumes, and go from door to door in order to collect treats. The adults often decorate their houses with ghostly figures, carve scary faces on pumpkins, and put candles in them to create jack-o'-lanterns. Is this the practice of Muslims? As we have some Muslims who do this, today we want to discuss, should we or shouldn't we? What is the harm or not in celebrating Halloween? We have with us as our guest one of our prominent imams in the Muslim community of Imam W. Dean Muhammad, Imam Amin Nathari. And we want to welcome Imam Nathari to The Power of Educating Our Own. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah, Dr. Shakir.
And welcome to The Power of Educating Our Own. And thank you so much for your patience. I was determined
no
for
problem.
Us to have this program because one of the challenges that I find, and you growing up Muslim and then also being a parent and now a grandparent of Muslim children, we've had the opportunity to live in this country and to be in the country, as our Prophet Isa said, to be in the country, but to be with the people, but not of the people. And so to do that is a big challenge. And we're finding what I have seen lately is that more and more of our Muslim families and communities are saying, well, there's nothing wrong or no harm in me dressing and participating in this pagan holiday if I understand that it is pagan and that I'm not actually indulging in the practice. So I want to get right to the subject since we're at 8:20. Let's talk about the Islamic perspective of this holiday. First, by looking at the history of Halloween, because I think a lot of us may not know the history of Halloween. So can
sure.
you first share with us that?
Well, okay. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Thank you again for having me on as a guest. I'm honored always to be with you. We can start at looking at the origin of Halloween, as that is the holiday at, in quotes that's right in front of us. But then I also wanted to hopefully we broaden the discussion to look at Christmas and some other holidays because we've also heard and experienced Muslims that will even go as far as to, you know, say that those particular or that particular day is an issue. And certainly I don't find that to be the truth. But from what we understand from the history of Halloween, it's actually began as the All Saints Day celebration, also called All Hallows, and then they just mm-hmm. named it Halloween. And it's definitely rooted, no matter what kind of research you do on it, it's certainly rooted in paganism. Initially, it used to mark, or when it was established, it was to mark the end of the summer and the harvest and the beginning of the dark winter. And that was at a time of year which was often associated with human death. So the Celtics, they believe that on the night before the new year, that the boundary between the worlds of the living and dead would became blurred. And it was on the night of the 31st that they celebrated what was called Samhain, which was believed that the ghost of the dead returned to the earth. So we could stop there. we don't
mm-hmm.
we don't even have to even drill down anymore into the origin of it to see that this is something that would certainly be, at the very least, we would want to stay away from as Muslims, let alone trying to make an excuse and encourage people that they should you know, indulge in it. So that's it for Halloween. Unfortunately, what happens, though, Dr. Sakir, is that, you know, because Islam has two holidays, if you don't count the weekly holiday, which is Jumu'ah, because Islam mm-hmm. only has those two holidays, most Muslims always look for excuses to find ways to have our children participate in these other holidays as if, like, you know, they're being deprived of something. So my argument has mm-hmm. always been, let's find and create more activities for our children to have that are fun on a regular basis so that they don't miss these things. And most importantly, let's make the two Eids to be such a festive and joyous occasion for our children that they don't get caught up in even thinking about this other stuff. Those things just don't even, it doesn't even enter into their thought process like that. You know, we look at the beautiful narration from our Prophet Muhammad, prayers and peace be upon him, where the Prophet said that, this is in Medina, he said that he came to Medina, and the people of Medina had, in the days of ignorance, which we know to be Jahiliyyah, that in the days of ignorance, they had many days for play and amusement. So the Prophet said, I came to you, and you had these days of play and amusement. Indeed, Allah has replaced them for you with two days that are far greater, the day of sacrifice and the day of fitr, or breaking fast. So because of that, that establishes that those two holidays are the days of celebration for the Muslim. Now, that doesn't remove from us the ability to be able to share with our families certain holidays that may have a cultural significance, and we can talk about that as we get into the show later. But certainly any and all of those holidays that have any type of paganism or shirk or anything that in its origin, you know, we have to stay away from it. This is something that a Muslim, you know, is forbidden to take part in.
Now, sometimes people say that we have to look at where the good outweighs the bad. And they may say that because it's an opportunity for joy and for families to come together and for this community celebration, that we have to forget about the origin because that's not their intent. What do you think about that?
I would disagree, because there are enough times that we can create, again, space and opportunity to have family gatherings and to have occasions of joy. Allah gives us 365 days in a year, and as we were taught as kids, an extra one with leap year. So why do we have to gravitate toward days that are pagan in origin, because they're supposed to be times of joy, and those days are few and far in between? We have all these other days that aren't holidays that we can make those times to be joyous festive occasions. Plan regular family gatherings, plan regular gatherings with your friends, plan regular gatherings with your children, in order to stay away from these things, because I would argue that the harm that it brings, you know, from the standpoint of, you know, what it does to our young people, you know, religiously, mm-hmm. how it puts these ideas in their head, that far outweighs any temporary joy that they would get, you know, from putting on costumes and going out and, you know, going to get bags of candy that they don't need anyway.
Alhamdulillah, I hear you. So maybe it's okay for us as adults to grasp this. So how do we pass this message on to our children, especially young children who may not go to a Muslim school, who are in an environment mm-hmm. where they may not be with Muslims. And so their strength and discipline and ability to be resilient beyond these and to be able to explain it may not be as strong as an adult. How do we teach our children?
I find that if children are taught these things early on, and they're taught, you know, even at a basic mm-hmm. level that a child can understand, if they're taught the origin of these things and how what Islam offers is greater, and, you know, why we celebrate our Eid and those are the best times for us, children don't get caught into these things. It goes back to this again. I have to reference our Prophet, prayers and peace be upon him. It goes back to one of his most famous sayings. Said every child is born in the state of fitr, right, in a state of purity, meaning what? Unblemished, unscathed by all these ideas, concepts, and constructs and all this. And then he went on to say, he said, it's his parents, you know, and his environment, or his or environment, that makes them other than on that state, which means that would put them or put in them the ideas of disbelief or the ideas of kufr and all these things that we know to be Islam. So children start out innocent of this to begin with. We as adults are the ones that put them in these spaces to make start making them think that these days are important. So for our children, even those children that are in where they may go to public school or what have you, if you teach them early on and you always make sure that they have joyous, you know, things to do in their life, or they have other activities to do in their life, it won't be an issue. Now, if you're running your home where there's no joy, and when you're running your home, or you're, you know, running your household in the way where if your children, you know, would fall short and make a mistake, you make them read the Quran as punishment. Go to your room and read the Quran. Now, if you're doing these kind of things, then of course your children are going to want to gravitate toward what they see their peers doing in school. But if you run your home where your home is a place of joy, and you always finding other Muslim, you know, families that you can interact and spend time with, then our children won't miss this at all. And this is why I get back to really understanding and expanding the role of our masajid and centers, because when we start to have consistent activities in our masajids and centers for our young people, then they're never at a loss by not being able to participate in some of the things that, you know, the secular society we live in participate in.
Alhamdulillah. And you grew up Muslim. And
absolutely.
You were a parent and a grandparent, yes. And I know that the same for me. So I know that in growing up, that was one of the things that when I became a parent, that was one of the questions I asked my mother, because for me, it was just like a natural process for us to be in our own world and to enjoy what we had. And so I didn't know that I wasn't, you know, I was missing something, as some people may say, because I wasn't missing anything. But as
absolutely
a parent, then I began to question, how do I transfer that same feeling to my own? And it's just what you said, to create a space and an environment of love, appreciation for the religion, love of the religion, and understanding of the religion. So I know that we find several who don't study the religion. It's just a title that we wear. For some, we wear it on our sleeves, but not in our hearts and in our practice. So
absolutely,
in the practice, if a child is going to a non-Muslim school and the masjid does not have opportunities for them to come and have joyful celebrations and memories, actually, that we make for them in our communities, then let's give our audience some suggestions, because Halloween is just one of those events.
Right,
we have
absolutely
several times a year where these things come. So you said you want to get into those. Let's talk about, because in 2 months we'll have another, and we'll have a whole season where there are a lot of commercials and a lot that's promoting the season. And so a lot of it is not religious and spiritual at all.
Now, the other one that you allude to, now that's, we know that to be the mother of them all. That's the biggest one. and that usually is the one that creates the most of a challenge, not just for young people, but even for adults. Because you find that, you know, many of us that have worked in corporate America, you know, I've worked in, you know, different environments where we may not be running our own business, we get consumed with that by nature of the workplace culture, because, as you said, it's a whole season. It's not even just one day. So you have the constant holiday parties and all of that stuff. So it's a test for the adults as well. But for the children, it becomes a particular test, particularly around the idea of gifts, you know, around the tangible part of it. It's not so much that, you know, children get caught up in the season. It's more just looking forward to what they're going to get on that particular day. So this gets back to the rule of thumb that I tried to lay out, you know, in looking at this holidays in general. If we're good to our children all year long, and if we're gifting all year long, and you hold on a second. Okay, I'm sorry about that. If we find or create opportunities where, I mean, it should be no such thing where even in terms of the two Eids, where we're only doing nice things for our children at Eid. That's the only time our children will be able to get gifts, whatever. We hope that as parents, you know, again, we don't go overboard, but we hope that we're loving and nurturing to our children all year long. We're able to give them things so that they're not just waiting for that one time, you know, during the year, or those two times during the year for Eid. But for us as Muslims and as a community, our Eids should be not going over the top and extravagant, but they should be absolutely memorable every year and each time. And I have no reservation about saying that, because anytime we want to give some other type of event, we can make sure that it's at the highest standards and all these other things, you know, when we have our various events and we have our culture night and all the things that we do that we understand to be as part of our tradition in the African American Muslim community. We can go all in for that. We need to go all in for the two E's, particularly for our children. And if you do that, then that will keep them away from, you know, this lore of Christmas when it comes to the material attachment. Now, for us growing up, Dr. Sakir, it was a little bit different because, again, we grew up in a protective space. Growing up as we did in the nation, that wasn't a holiday that we participated in. So much so, we didn't even open the school. Our school used to be closed on those holidays because it was a time that we considered that, you know, we didn't need to be out and people should be home with their family. Now, having said that, we used to always spend December 25th at my grandmother's house as a family. I come from a family where, you know, my mother and father accepted Islam as teenagers. My mother's sisters became Muslims. So we would all be over at my grandmother's house just being together as it being a day off. And majority of the people would be Muslim. And, you know, my grandmother wasn't Muslim, but the majority of people would be Muslim. And we weren't caught up into the whole Christmas thing. It was just a situation where we could be together as a family on a day that we had a day off. Ditto for Thanksgiving. There's some problematic issues around Thanksgiving. And don't get me wrong, I'm not a vegan by any stretch. I love turkey like everybody else that may love turkey. But we don't get caught up into Thanksgiving based on the origin of it. I would think that, and I would hope that most of us have been educated on the origin of Thanksgiving, and we're not celebrating it in the context that it was initially established, that if we're with our families or whatever, it's just a time that we get to be together as a family, again, on a day that everybody happens to be off. And Thanksgiving for us, we look at it as a cultural piece because it's the principle of our religion. Thanksgiving is what? Thanks, shukr. Shukr is mentioned over 70 times in the Quran. So we're always giving thanks and being grateful. So we use that as an opportunity to do that. But we don't get so caught up into it that it becomes, you know, this thing that becomes the only time we get together. We always encourage the establishment of family life and community life so that we're not, you know, consumed with these particular holidays as they're celebrated in the society. And it's a challenge. But it's not insurmountable. It's not insurmountable at all. As long as you do it with some forethought and planning, then you can find a way to escape these things. And lastly, I would say that in terms of holidays like Thanksgiving, because school is closed. Holidays like Halloween. If I'm a parent and my child is attending a public school, for me, that's a day I'm gonna keep my child home. I'm just being honest with you. I'm keeping my child home that day because, first of all, there's too much stuff that's going on out there anyway that particular day with a bunch of crazy people that I don't even want to have my children going back and forth. And two, for those few schools, and not many schools even do it anymore where they let people come to school dressed up or they have parties in school. They kind of try to separate that piece from the today's school environment. But in those schools that do allow it, you know, where perhaps all the other children in class may be dressed up in a costume, why do you want to send your child there and have your child for that particular day be the only one that's not dressed up in a costume? Just keep your child home that day, you know? I mean, I know it may sound like an oversimplification, but we have to strive for it. If you know that day is coming once a year and you know that the school that your child attends celebrates that within the school, then that should be a day that you just plan to keep your child home.
But in keeping them home and we're working, we're going to leave them home alone. You know, what's the plan? Because I believe that if we're going to do that, then we need to, because we're talking about educating, I really and sincerely believe that it has to be where they understand why they're there and what's going on with them, and that there's something productive that they are doing that helps groom their thinking so that they are not feeling like I've got to run away from it to be away from it.
I totally agree, but that's the process. So as we're going through that process with our small children, I'm particularly talking about the small children here, meaning if you have children that are in, you know, the grades where, you know, we know they're at a really formative stage in their development, and this, and they happen to be in the school where that idea is enforced, then I would, in addition to explaining to them that this is not something that we do and why we don't do it, I would also keep them home. I know you say we work, whatever, but it's one day, and we know it's coming every year. So we plan accordingly. That as long as my child is in this school, if this is a norm of the school, then I got to find maybe some other parents of Muslim children that attend that same school. And that day we keep our children out. We do something. And I'm saying that in the case that the celebration of that particular day is just that dominant in that particular school. And if it's just something where it might be a couple of individual teachers making the choice to let their students do something, then you deal with it on a case-by-case basis. But that would just be one recommendation I would make. The other part, too, is that, and I'll kind of mention this, and this is not a plug for the book, but I'm kind of mentioning it in the book. You know, I mentioned it in the book. When I wrote the book, The Friday Prayer and the Two Celebrations Made Simple, in the section where we're talking about the two celebrations, I mentioned about, you know, planning and preparing for Eid festivals in addition to cultural considerations for Muslims in the West, where I talk about that we have to be involved in the public school system where our children attend on a consistent basis so that the school officials will also know the norms that we have as Muslims and which of these days that they may be celebrating in the school are a challenge for us, so that they can work along with us to make sure that we minimize our children from having to participate in any of those things. And that's the process. We need to be engaged. We need to be engaged at that level, but we have to be proactive, you know, until we get to the point where we're not sending our children to any of those schools. And we know that that's a work in progress. The reality is that the statistics that we see still cite that maybe upwards of 95% of Muslim children attend public school.
Wow.
Really, that's the glaring number. Yes.
Yes, it is.
And one study some years ago went as high as like 97%. And then I saw a few over the past 3 to 5 years that put the number kind of at 92 to 95%. So either way,
that's still a great number.
It's an overwhelming number. So that means that what for those 95% of our children that don't attend Islamic school, then we have to be advocates on their behalf, and we have to be engaged on their behalf with the public school systems within our municipalities to make sure that we're able to, you know, insulate our children from these things, while at the same time continuing the educational process around these holidays in our homes and in our masajid and centers.
Amen. And I want us to continue this because the education part to me is most important, and I think that that may be what was for me my saving grace. As a child growing up, because I know we would talk to other children our age and tell them with pride why we did not celebrate Christmas, Easter, Halloween.
Oh, yes.
Any of those holidays they had, we would say to them why we did not celebrate them, and we could give them that history. And I remember being 7, 8, and 9, being able to speak it myself and to be able to explain it. So when I come back, I want to talk about how we're going to take a break. And when I come back, I would like for us to, one, have our audience to call, press 1 if you have a question or a comment and you want to share how you're able to help your children, your family understand why we don't celebrate pagan holidays. And two, if we can get into the ways that we can practically help our children to understand how they too can be their own advocates as well as we advocate for them. So we're going to take a break. We'll be right back and ask you as listeners to go ahead and line up, push 1 on your phone. So when we come back, you too can join the conversation.
Peace be upon you. Are you enjoying what you're hearing? If so, stay tuned. We'll be right back after these short messages. You are listening live to American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in all of the nation.
Alhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen. Houston, Texas, better known as the Bayou City, is proud to be hosting the 15th annual A Time to Be Grateful Awards Banquet this December 14th through the 16th. The weekend will kick off Friday with Culture Night themed A Journey Through Time, hosted by Preacher Moss and featuring performances by the MGT Step Team, the soulful vocal sounds of Akila Nihanda, the energetic wisdom of Islamic Force, and the dynamic sounds of the Ron Cole Band. Don't miss the early morning exercises led by Fitness Life's own Hanifa Salim. Saturday includes a tour of the Bayou City, knowledge sharing, workshops, as well as political and community engagement, mental health education, and business seminars. Also, there will be a youth track for ages 13 through 17, hosted by America's premier youth camp, Camp Khalil. For the single brothers and sisters looking to connect with your other half, the Black Muslim Singles Society is hosting a single social to help you reach that goal. Don't worry, married couples. There will be a marriage social for you as well. Imam Fahim Shuaib is bringing his expertise to help you keep the honey sweet on the moon. Saturday evening, dress to impress for the awards banquet. The keynote speaker for the evening is author, spoken word artist, and city councilman, the prominent Bashir Jones. Bashir Jones is the first Muslim to be elected to the Cleveland, Ohio City Council. Sunday is all about the business. At the business breakfast, leaders will share insights on starting and growing your business. And the weekend will end with the interfaith public address. Don't miss out. Get your tickets today. You can register online at www.muslimjournal.net/ATTBG. Vending and advertisement space is also available. So don't delay. Register today. Go to www.muslimjournal.net/ATTBG. We will see you there, inshallah.
Introducing the CWSC cloning program, where we combine just the right DNA to create expertise on demand right in the laboratory. Need an accountant or food bank specialist to help you design that community outreach program? Or maybe you need an IT specialist to help you with your website. Whatever the need, the CWSC cloning program does not exist. If we want expertise, it's going to take you and me inside the MCNRD, the Model Communities National Resource Directory. Visit CWSC.us today, because we are the change we've been waiting for. Cloning won't do it, but trusting the group intellect will. Visit CWSC.us and register in the Model Communities National Resource Directory today, because together, we can remake the world.
We are the ones we've been waiting for. We are the change that we seek.
And we're back. You are listening to AM 360, The Power of Educating Our Own, with me, your host, Quran Shakir, and our special guest today, Imam Amin Nathari. We are talking about the idea of Muslims celebrating pagan holidays. Is it a good or is it a not good, so good? What should we be doing as Muslims? And so we welcome you to this subject and this conversation. And Imam Nathari, thank you again for joining us. We have one of our listeners who has pushed one on their phone, so we're going to invite them to join the conversation, and we'll get back to answer that question that we posed just before we left. So to 770-981, welcome to The Power of Educating Our Own. State your name and where you're calling from. You are on the air. 770-981, state your name and where you're calling from. You are on the air. If your phone is on mute, take it off of mute. There you go. Yes.
Awesome. Greetings. Assalamualaikum. How are you?
Wa alaikum assalam. Welcome.
Alaikum assalam.
This is Jamila Heck here from Atlanta. And I wanted to actually make a statement. Thank you very much, Imam Tari, for your comments. And one of the things that I was thinking about while you were speaking is that as Muslims, we establish our own tradition for when our children are out of school, it's around the Christmas break. And so naturally there's going to be some curiosity or some kind of something where they want to be able, when they go back to school, oh, I did this or I did that. And it doesn't have to necessarily be around school, but it may be family traditions of a family vacation or something where they know every December the 15th, we're going to go on a cruise or we're going to go to the mountains or something like that. So I just wanted to put that out there in terms of us establishing traditions that have nothing to do with religion, but around those times when we're out of school or when we're out of work, that we can actually create really incredible memories for our families.
That's a very good point,
Jamila,
because most are out of work. That's good. Yes, go ahead.
No, I was going to say no, absolutely. Sister Jamila, that's exactly the kind of thing that I was referring to when I said that we can create opportunities for our children. So if our schools and things are normally closed during that time, then we should already have, you know, alternative programming as already part of our thought process and be doing things that make that time of year memorable, that totally takes their attention away from, you know, what other folks are doing, and establish our own tradition and our own cultural norms. That's a beautiful thing, and we should be encouraging
that.
And honestly, you know, sister, the interesting thing about it is that these things we're talking about doesn't require a lot of effort. It just requires a few dedicated people to come together, plan it, and make it happen. And again, I keep saying it's not about skill; it's about will. Do we have the will to just do these things?
Mhm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes,
thank
ma'am.
You.
Thank you so much.
Yes. And we have another of our callers, 510-517. Welcome to the Power of Educating Our Own. State your name and where you're calling from. You are on the air.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Imam Nazim Pasha, right in Atlanta.
Wa alaikum assalam.
You know, I've been listening very attentively, and I agree wholeheartedly with the imam and the last caller. Everything that they said is exactly on point. But I want to share a side that I experienced. And
yes,
I was
isolated.
I was in New Mexico, and small community, very dysfunctional, more immigrant Muslims there than it was indigenous. And as I began to develop my family, I primarily was the greater of the conversion in my house, you know. So I was really the only Muslim in my house who was really studying, trying to understand, trying to do whatever. And kind of the cut to the chest is, as my family began to grow, I began to realize that I needed a school. So I left New Mexico, went to Phoenix, and got there. There wasn't a school, but there was a weekend school and whatever. But as I even progressed with that, there wasn't enough. You need the daily reinforcements to reinforce your message. Because it sounds like you are the only one talking this, promoting this, and you get into a bunch of do's and don'ts. And instead of pulling them into the religion, it kind of pushes them out, because you got a freeling, do our own thing, freedom society with all their friends, which are non-Muslims, and then they come home to this. And so the bottom line was that as I progress and they're older now and I've got grandchildren and everything, I was so busy trying to preserve them as Muslims, I forgot they were children. And I'm saying that to say that you have to pick your battles in a way that you don't lose the war.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best advice I can give the people, because I, too, did not have a school to put them in. It was all public. I kept finding and searching and finding some schools that were pretty close to what it was, and they did good and they fared well. But I was really handicapped a lot in losing a lot of the battles to get them to really stay connected to Islam and get in a community where they could connect with people who were their peers and mm-hmm. their age group and whatnot. And I did it in Arizona, and it took pretty good. But like I said before, I think I did more damage than good because I was constantly trying to put Islam in front of them, and they were taking mm-hmm. it, but they were also taking exception that it looked like I didn't want them to do certain things, and I didn't want them to have fun and enjoy themselves. And so they associated that with the religion. So I stopped right there because it is a challenge. We have to be creative. Mm-hmm. We have to act like we're going to win the war and have that faith. But a lot of times emotion gets in the way of that, and you just don't come across with the confidence that you need to in your message.
Good point.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very
Absolutely.
Much. To both yeah. of our guests that just spoke, if you could push one on your phone as you come out of the queue, that will help us so we'll know when someone else is coming in and wants to speak. Very good point, and that's a part of what I hear a lot with people, and I love the way he phrased it, between a war and a battle.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we then create and remember that they are children? I like that concept that he said, remember that they are children. So to give them the joy, and I don't remember not having joy, and I know
that we didn't. I think that's probably our challenge too, sister, for you and I, that We never looked at a time when, as Muslim children, that were far removed from those days, that we didn't have any joy. We didn't lack for anything because we weren't caught up in Christmas and Halloween and the Easter bunny hunt or any of those things. So maybe now it's becoming more of a cultural phenomena. And even honestly, raising my children, you know, I never remember that. My children attended public school because for a while we didn't have solid Islamic schools for us to send them to in where we were in northern New Jersey. And honestly, maybe it was just Allah just blessed me with my children. My children never complained about not being involved in any of that, you know, any of those other days. So I guess it all depends. You know, there's a lot of things, environment.
But what did you do?
Yeah.
What did you do your home?
I did exactly what I outlined. That we constantly did things where we constantly spent time together, you know, as a family, and did other fun things. So that when those things happened, when other people would celebrate, we would be like, my children would kind of take the idea like, okay, we have fun all the time. Like Halloween, no big deal for us. You know what I mean? What are we missing? You know? So again, it all depends on, you know, strategically, how you approach it. Is it a challenge? Absolutely, it is a challenge. But if you start from the beginning, then it's usually less of a challenge. What I find is that sometimes many of us will start off early allowing those things in children's lives. And then as we grow in our own, you know, faith convictions, then we'll want to stop our children because now our level of Islam is elevated to a point where it's something we want our children to be away from. But by that point, it's too late now. I mean, the proverbial horse has left the stable. So if you've had them indulge in that, you can't go and take it back now, you know. And then the other point, too, which also raises another challenge, which is probably from another show or before another show. Sometimes we have a challenge around dealing with these things when we have mixed households. The imam alluded to, there was a time where he was like really the only Muslim like in his house, like really studying or whatever at that level. Sometimes it goes further where you have, I mean, these situations where people are married or have, you know, extended family living in the house, and not everybody's Muslim. So now you're allowing these things to be in your house around your children because you're compromising mm-hmm. for the other relatives, so you're going to put a tree in your house. Right? So it's like, you know, there's a lot of challenges that exist, and there's other things that we have to shield our children from, you know, at an early age if we want it to be lasting part of their psyche. But I certainly agree with the imam, you know, we're not going to go to the point where we're so, you know, hardcore about it that, you know, we win the battle, end up losing the war, meaning losing our children.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time,
mm-hmm.
you know, some of these holidays are so offensive to our belief systems as Muslims that the compromise can only go to a certain level. You have to just, through the education process and through love, how you come across and how you articulate it, where it doesn't just become, you know, you're forbidden to do this and there's no more discussion about it. It has to be a nuanced discussion. And sometimes we don't give young people and children enough credit for being able to, you know, grasp certain things. If we explain it to them in the right way, then usually they'll be able to understand it, absorb it, and just further grow into it as, you know, as they grow and evolve in their own lives.
And being a teacher, that's one of the things that I do with my students when I'm explaining to them. Well, for me, everything comes from the Quran. So I would always take it back to the Quran and say, what does Allah say to us? And then say, how can we practically apply this? What would you think we could do instead of doing this that would be pleasing to Allah? And then when they begin to create their own space and their own opportunities, their buy-in is different. And their love of it and their practice of it is a different application as well. We have sparked something in some of our listeners, so we're going to hear what they have to say. And so 510-517, I think you've commented before, so go right ahead and welcome back at Fixes the Email Magazine. And it's spinning, so I'm not sure if it's going to let him in or not. It's spinning and not really coming in for his mic. So while that's working, I'm going to see if I can bring in.
I should be on now.
There you go. Yes, you are. Right. Go ahead, Brother Imam.
Yeah, I just want to make this observation because one of the things that I would have benefited from what the brother was saying was most of my outreach to people was just to try to stay Muslim. You know, I would call an imam and I would, you know, try to understand about the Arabic or understand what, you know, what Imam Muhammad was saying, et cetera, et cetera. But if I'd had a hotline, there was a national hotline that I could call as a parent and ask other parents, well, what are you doing? How do you win that battle? How are you getting those victories? You know, what support can I get? You know, I'm isolated and kind of share my side and get that someone who's a sounding board. I know I could have been much more successful because most of my thing was just trying to survive as a Muslim. I was thinking about my children, but I was trying to stay Muslim because there were so many transitions. There were so many changes. There were so many things thrown at you. So many questions you had to answer. And so most of my thing was just trying to be a good parent and be a good Muslim. And I didn't know that if there had been a hotline. And, you know, there's this thing about OPM, other people's money. Well, there's another OPM, other people's mistakes. You learn and benefit from other people's mistakes because they already did. You said, well, brother, the first thing that you shouldn't do is blah, blah, blah. And then you okay, I already did it, but I won't do no more. You know, so those kind of things. And so those things will help if it had been a hotline available, and you might want to think about that in the future.
That's a good point. Absolutely. So for those who are listening, let us consider something like that because we do have to be our brother's keeper and be a source of support for one another. And so that's a wonderful option for us. And with that, one of the things that came to my mind also was that I didn't have a hotline per se, but I come from a Muslim family, so I had a lot of people that I can call on. And that when we created that space that we're talking about, so that vacation that Sister Jamila talked about or the family dinners that you mentioned earlier, then this became our routine. And so my children were always surrounded by the Muslims in our area, whoever they were, and we created this wonderful gathering of people. And I know that also because Imam Muhammad has a big emphasis on interfaith, I do think it's important for us to teach our children to be in the world but not of the world. So be here with the people, be able to practice your religion, love what you do, and appreciate theirs and what they do at the same time. So I think that's important for us to also note and understand. I know we're at the top of the hour, but we do have another caller who has pushed one on their phone. So we're going to welcome 336-558. Welcome to the Power of Educating Our Own. State your name and where you're calling from. You are on the air.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. Come to the live.
Imam Munir Muhammad. I thought I was calling in to be part of the show.
For the next program? Yes, sir. You are, Brother Imam. Just hold right on. We were closing out our program, so you call the right number.
All right.
So, Imam, I mean, thank you so much for joining us, and we have come to the top of our hour, mashallah. And I know that we do owe each other the responsibility to be there for each other and to strengthen each other. That Surah 3, Ayat 200 tells us that we are to vie together and strengthen each other. And so we look for that opportunity too. And that's why I thought it was important for us to have this conversation, so we don't just look on as people find themselves engulfed in the practices and make the excuses and move forward and not really understand the goal. So that was the thing I wanted to say, is that if we set a goal for why we are Muslim and why we have Muslim families and Muslim homes and a part of a Muslim community, wherever it is, set that goal and then mark the steps to get there. What does it take to achieve that goal? So Imam Muhammad told us to drive our stake in the land, meaning to make our presence well known so that in 100 years, in 200 years, 300 years, the Muslim American presence on this land will be strong and well spent and well felt and appreciated. And we would have these years of practices where people can celebrate who we are and appreciate who we are. So we have that, to me, as one of our goals. And so with that, we have cultural experiences, business experiences, education experiences. We have all these things that will connect us, and we have the responsibility to make it happen. So we know that many of us are over age 40, age 50, and we won't be around for another 100 years. But we're talking about our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren. They will be. So what kind of Muslims will they be? What kind of humans will they be? That's the responsibility that we have. And will our immersing ourselves in a culture that is in opposition to our religious practices help to groom and grow us in that direction? So again, I thank you, and I'm going to allow you to do closing remarks as we close out our prepare to close out our program.
Well, again, I want to thank you as always. It was an honor to be on with you. And you kind of summarized what I would have said in closing remarks. You covered a lot of it. The only thing that I would add is that following up on what Imam Nazim mentioned earlier in terms of the hotline, see, this is why as a community we have to remain connected and we have to reconnect in those cases where we're disconnected, because that allows us to be able to always share best practices of what's working in other communities. So we know that there's community that exists among us that have the same challenges that we have, that may have already overcome those challenges or put together, you know, plans and activities and things of that nature that can, you know, help us navigate that space. So we need to be able to share of best practices. And then those things also go on to what you just said about making sure that, you know, we leave a lasting legacy, because we do have those things. We do have those cultural experiences and the religious experiences and the political experiences. They just have to be documented, and they just have to be made to be part of, as we could say, the public record that we shared with the public, so that after we're gone, no one is able to come and rewrite the narrative as if we didn't already do the work around these things. So I'm hoping and praying, inshallah, that we can continue it, and we can come back and have a broader discussion around these things and just around just the whole idea of, you know, from a cultural perspective, you know, how do we continue to be, you know, in a society, but not of it or consumed by it to the point where it compromises us. And we know that this is something that we can do. Allah has already shown us that we have the ability to do this. And I think our community is a great example of being able to live and balance and benefit from both worlds. So we have a lot that we can share to the world, but we just have to come together and, you know, connect among ourselves to see what works best. And then we can move forward, you know, united, and show those things to the world that, you know, this is what Islam stands for. You know, we're respectful of all other folks' faith, tradition, and norms. And we're definitely never going to be one where we talk bad about what other people do from a faith perspective. But at the same time, we have our own norms, our own traditions. And America would even be able to benefit by looking at what we do and absorbing some of what we do into their own culture, you know, within a broader society.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for joining us. And To our listening audience, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, said, "With knowledge, man rises to the heights of goodness and to a noble position associated with sovereigns in this world and attains the perfection of happiness in the next." Brothers and sisters, we can do this. Stay tuned for a good book. We ask you to make learning a precious and powerful thing for you and a child or children. Support a Muhammad Schools. You have been listening to The Power of Educating Our Own with me, your host, Quran Shakir, and my guest, Imam Amin Nathari. Thank you for tuning in. You can hear the playback at www.am360.org under archives. As always, tune in at 8 p.m. every Sunday until we reconnect next week, 8 to 9 p.m. on the number one Muslim radio station, AM360. Remember, learning means keeping the mind open and active to receive, question, develop, and empower. What we learn cannot be taken away. Thank you, and assalamu alaikum.
You are listening to American Muslim 360 live on Blog Talk Radio, a division of CWIC, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, Incorporated. Visit us online, www.cwsc.us or www.blogtalkradio.com/AmericanMuslim360.
On my face, yeah. And I up that son and listen, and I just turned 22 years old. I must be the greatest. I told the world, I talk to God every day. If God's with me, can't nobody be against me. I shook up the world. I shook up the world. I'm the king of the world.
Hold it, hold it, hold it.